Welcome back to the Generations Radio broadcast, my friends. Today we want to talk about parental rights, and we get back to this subject again and again because this, my friends, is the battleground. This is where the battle is most fiercely raging right now in the world of worldviews when it comes to the political sphere. If we can't protect our rights as parents, as families, friends, I can't guarantee that the family is going to be in good shape in the years to come, in the generations to come. And that's why this issue is important. We're going to get back to it today on the program. And Mike Ferris is back with us from Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He's president of Patrick Henry College. Welcome back to the program, Mike. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, Kevin. Always a treat to be with you.
Mike, parental rights, man, you've spent a career on this one. It's a big deal for me. Why such a big deal, first of all?
Well, if we're going to have a free country, we need to have young people who believe in the principles of freedom. If they're going to be believing in the principles of freedom, they have to have free families. And if we're going to have young people raised up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, their parents have to be free to teach them about Jesus and that Jesus is the only way to God. And those things are under attack in really, really important ways. And so since I believe in Christianity and a free America, there's nothing I can do but other than stand up for parents' rights very strongly.
Mike, is it a fair comparison to draw in the establishment of this nation where the church was under attack from the state, and the state wanted to control the sphere of the church, and it was such a huge deal back in the 1600s, and the state was trying to direct who was going to be the pastor, what your church service was going to look like, who gets to wear robes, who gets candles in the service, and so forth, and there was a battle going on between the sphere of church and state in the 1500s and 1600s. Now, fast forward 400 years later, we're not all that concerned about the state controlling the church, although we will get to that. I think sometimes there's a little pressure in that direction. But the issue is really the family today. Is that a fair comparison, that today the state is pushing hard on the sphere of the family?
Absolutely. In fact, in the 1500s and 1600s, there were compulsory attendance laws. You were required to go to a state-approved church.
Right.
Now we have compulsory attendance laws that you're required to go to a state-approved school. Yeah. And they want to regulate the content of the school. They want to regulate the content of the teaching. Who does the teaching? And so on. And, you know, we've won most of the portions of that battle, but the pressures are all still on. And there are other aspects of it. There are other spinoffs of the same idea. But you're absolutely correct in saying that the government believes it should control all aspects of our lives. And it goes with, frankly, the socialist mindset. If you believe that the purpose of government is to provide for people's needs, then you believe in defining their needs, regulating their needs, and providing for their needs. If you believe the purpose of government is to protect life, liberty, and property, and punish those who do evil, then you have a foundation for your government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the clash of socialism and freedom that's being waged against the family.
It's got to be a balm to your soul to find people out there who embrace their responsibilities and really aren't seeking security from the state. They would rather have the freedom.
Absolutely. The homeschooling movement is such an encouragement in so many ways, but not the least of which is the modeling of the form of government that we need, that the purpose of government is not to provide for kids' needs.
Yeah.
People like to talk about these things as children's rights. Well, the whole orientation of calling these rights of children rather than needs of children is to make it a government orientation rather than a family orientation. Families fill children's needs. Governments, they think, fulfill children's rights. And so, children don't have a right to an education in the constitutional sense. They have a very legitimate need for an education, and parents are the ones that should be responding to that need. And, you know, if the government wants to do it, it's still in the needs business. It's not in the rights business.
Mike, I want to draw in the health of children because you were on Fox News a couple of weeks ago, as I recall, on this very issue. And let me read to you from OutsideTheBeltway.com, recent article, okay? As the Western world gets fatter and fatter, the solutions to slimming it down get even more draconian. In Britain yesterday, the government issued guidelines saying children under the age 5, including babies who can't walk yet, should exercise every day. Today in the States, a pair of Harvard scholars writing in the Journal of the American Medical Association Advocate, stripping away the custody rights of parents of super obese children. Therefore, real. Quote, despite the discomfort posed by state intervention, it may sometimes be necessary to protect a child, said Lindsay Murtagh, a lawyer lawyer and researcher at Harvard School of Public Health, et cetera, et cetera. Mike, I mean, is this another area in which the state is going to try to control the family?
It is. I mean, the first thing that about this whole thing is that the definition of obesity is pretty weird,
uh-huh.
because I did some calculations as I was on my way down to that Fox News interview. Tim Tebow is 4 pounds under obese, which means he's significantly overweight.
Okay.
Michelle Obama, uh-huh. Obama's height and weight's available on the internet. Uh-huh. She is significantly overweight and just barely under obese, okay. According to these standards. And neither of them, obviously, are actually obese. They are robust, healthy individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if we're talking about the super obese, I mean, I guess this girl got taken out of her house in England in the last week.
Yeah.
800 and something pounds.
Yeah, okay. I saw that.
That's
yeah.
obese.
That's obese, yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
obese.
She's got a problem.
She's got a serious problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there was a mom in England who fed her daughter nothing other than chicken nuggets
mm-hmm.
for like 17
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
But when we're interfering with normal people who are doing normal things with their kids and they're maybe 5 or 10 pounds overweight, that's where we've got to be a free country and,
mm-hmm.
and to make sure that we're not interfering except in these extreme cases where, you know, if you've got an 800-pound kid, something ought to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. The reality.
Should have been done when she was 327
yeah,
pounds.
That's
yeah.
exactly
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are afraid of speaking up for those who need it. And so because we're afraid to speak up against those that really are neglecting or abusing their kids, we make these draconian regulations for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's going to do this.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to do that because we're afraid to go up to one person and say, you know what, you got a problem here.
Mm-hmm.
We need to deal with this problem. And frankly, it should be first and foremost the family and friends of that,
mm-hmm.
the people in their church, the grandparents. Somebody needs to come alongside those parents and say, you know, look at Billy's getting out of hand here. We need to
mm-hmm.
do something about this. That's how it should really work. And rather than making these rules for everybody, like you can't do bake sales, you can't
mm-hmm.
sell candy,
mm-hmm.
you can't buy,
right.
you know, French fries for your kids anymore. I mean,
mm-hmm.
All of that's just ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
non-free way of responding to particularized problems so that a few people really should pay attention to.
Well, I'm trying to think of a time in which government actually solved one of these problems. You know, one of the things they try to do is impose a one size fits all solution, you know, as if somehow if we just outlaw obesity, we'll drag everybody into this, including Tim Tebow and Michelle Obama, and we'll fix everything there. They try to kill flies with big old sledgehammers. You know, it just doesn't work very well.
It doesn't, especially when we start doing it at the federal level.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, some of these problems probably are appropriate to deal with on the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Some more appropriately on the local level. I can't think of a single one of these issues that we're talking about that has any legitimate basis, either constitutionally or as a matter of common sense, to be at the federal level and certainly not at the international level, which
yes.
is where we're headed.
That's exactly right.
And so we really need to be dealing with problems at the area, at the level, where it makes sense to do so. And the Founding Fathers were really pretty smart about this. They gave jurisdiction to the states and localities on almost everything and kept a very few things and said, okay, feds, you can deal with international issues. You could deal with national defense. You could deal with our borders. Do those things and do those right, and they should be leaving everything else alone. But we're seeing the federal government running away with its own sense of power because they want to try to be all things to all people.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the international scene, I mean, it's incredible what the UN Conventions on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, on the Rights of the Child, I mean, these things are getting down into the nitty-gritty. I mean, you say these things ought to be taken care of in the communities. Absolutely. Now we've got an international government trying to dictate right down to what happens to our disabled children in our homes
right.
in Elbert County, Colorado. I mean, that's outrageous. Could it happen here? You really
well,
think that
yeah.
this could happen here?
We've got Republicans who are co-sponsoring the ratification of this treaty. John McCain is a co-sponsor
oh, no.
of this treaty. A senator from Kansas, you know, Kansas, incredibly conservative
yeah.
state. Look, a senator from Wyoming are Republican
oh, no.
co-sponsors
mm-hmm.
of this treaty. So you better believe it could happen. It's in the Senate for ratification right now. And it's an incredible danger. I mean, starting with the definition of disability.
Yeah.
The treaty's preamble says that disability is an evolving concept. There's no definition. That's it.
Yeah.
Disability is an evolving concept, which means the UN gets to decide what they count as a disability. So a kid with glasses, I guess that's disabled.
Yeah, Mike, I've got four disabilities. I mean, I got congenital lymphedema, I have an eye problem, I have an ear problem. I'm one disabled individual.
Well, Kevin, we need the UN to look after you.
Yeah.
and so the we should not be entering into these kind of treaties for a number of reasons, but the big reason is this.
Okay.
Americans should make the law for America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like federal laws on disabilities, frankly. I think it should be state law. But I'll be hanged if I'm going to stand around and let the UN tell my church how many parking spaces for the disabled I have to have and whether or not our ramp's good enough and whether we need to have an elevator here or if ramping system will work. When the UN gets the authority to tell churches and Patrick Henry College, and in fact, it will tell your home that you have to meet these disability standards, because that's the rule under the treaty, is that no private person can be permitted to discriminate on against a disabled person. So if a door-to-door salesman comes to your house in a wheelchair and you don't have wheelchair access for that door-to-door salesman, you've discriminated against that salesman and you're in violation. You, the individual, are in violation of the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. It is absolute insanity how megalomaniac this thing is.
I can't believe you got Republican senators and House reps out there supporting this. It's hard to imagine.
Because people don't read or think. You know, they're signing it because they think it means, oh, I like disabled people. Well, good grief. If it was that, everybody should sign it. You know, you and I should sign it. If it was a, you know, we think disabled people ought to be treated well. If that's all it was, is just a general statement, which I call politically a yada. You ought to do this, you ought to do that, you ought to do the other thing. Mm-hmm. It was just a yada.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Sign it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's binding law coming from the UN, you just have to conclude that the people can't read, or else they're really evil. And I choose to believe that they're incapable of reading.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Where do these things come from? Where do the United Nations directives come from? The Muslim governments, the petty dictator-run countries, the communist countries, the socialist do-gooders from Sweden and Europe? I mean, who writes all this stuff?
It's the professional class of nannies that want jobs running your life. It's the social worker class, it's the intellectuals, it's the college professors who feel like they need to run everybody else's lives. When I was in law school, I took constitutional law the first semester from Paul Freund, who was a visiting professor from Harvard. He was one of the best known law professors of his day. I was in his office visiting with him one day, and he said, "Mike, it's too bad that we make so many rules in this nation by counting heads rather than by weighing heads." And what he meant was the smart people should rule this country, not by the process of the Democratic Republican process of electing leaders to make the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is the way for the smart people to run our lives.
Yes.
The so-called smart people.
Right.
It's the intelligentsia, the college professors, the social workers, the Department of Social Services. On an international scale, it's those professional nannies, the village that wants to raise our children. That's the enemy. And the nations are complicit with it.
Yeah.
You know, all those groups you named, they're part of it. But at the core of it, it's the army of blue beret nannies.
Okay, let's bring this home to the average homeschool family out there, Mike. How can the UN Convention of the Rights of the Persons with Disability affect a family, a homeschool family with a child with a disability? And we know that there are a lot of families doing it with children disabled.
The decision whether or not your child should be homeschooled will no longer be yours to make. If this treaty is ratified in the U.S., then it's the decision about the education of the child is subject to the best interest of the child standard. And what that means is the government gets to decide what it thinks is best for your child without proving, as an initial matter, that you've harmed your child in any way. Today, the government can't use the best interest of the child standard as a general rule, until it is first proven that you've harmed your child in some way, you know, abuse, neglect, abandonment, or you're going through a divorce and the family is broken. Mm-hmm. You have to have some basis for saying the family is broken before you do that, because the best interest standard is a dispositional standard. It's like sentencing. You've gone through the trial, you've made the factual finding, and now we're going to the dispositional phase of this trial. We're going to say, okay, now what are we going to do about this, that we've done the wrongdoing part?
Right. Okay.
And so, we, under this treaty, you skip the wrongdoing part and you go right to sentencing. So every family with a disabled child in this country will be under the same exact legal standards as if they were proven to have abused their child. Hmm. That's the reality. And so the government will say, okay, well, we get to decide what's best for your child. That's the big number one thing right there.
And so
everything about your child, including their child's education, everything about their child is subject to complete government control just on the subjective opinion of what some social worker thinks is best.
And think about the tens of thousands of families that have been very successful in bringing their little special needs kids home and training them one-on-one and really respecting the principle of individuality, loving that child and getting to know that child's learning styles and so forth and just working with that child in the home environment. And a lot of these bureaucrats are not going to respect that. They're not going to understand that homeschooling is actually very, very good for many, many disabled children.
They will be suspect of us for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. The ones you've just given, some have religious objections to the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
Other families have, we'll face real problems. You know, once in a while you'll hit the social worker that likes what you're doing.
Sure.
But
mm-hmm.
it's no longer your right. Mm-hmm. It's you're hoping and waiting for the social worker to agree with you. And sometimes you'll win, sometimes you'll lose. But it shouldn't be that way. It should be our decision entirely. Right now under the IDEA, the Individuals with Disability Act of the federal government, the public schools have the absolute responsibility to offer your child alternative education.
Mm-hmm.
You can walk away and say, no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
That goes away. No longer can you just simply ignore what the government says. The government offers, and you're going to be forced to accept.
Wow. That's intense. Now, also, the discipline of children is affected by this as well, I understand, as well as the UN Convention for the Rights of the Child.
Right.
That affects how we discipline our children.
Right. Mm-hmm. This treaty is written in a way that it will require every parent to comply with the no spanking rule.
Okay.
Because the way it's written is that it simply calls for a ban on inhuman and degrading treatment and punishment, which is right out of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, mm-hmm. which has been authoritatively interpreted by the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child in their General Comment 8 and in numerous specific decisions against various countries. It's not limited to disabled people. It says no one shall be subjected to this kind of treatment, which is explicitly means nobody can spank their child. And so even though it's supposed to be limited to just disability issues, Article 15 does not limit it in that way. The other really scary thing that's in this on the educational front is that some of the older UN human rights treaties and organizational documents, like the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, actually had really strong pro-parent provisions in them. And the reason that they did back in the 50s, 40s, 50s, and 60s was that the human rights law in those years were being written in response to Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany was so anti-family, so anti-parent, that in response to that, the first wave of UN documents were actually really pretty solid on parental rights declarations. All that's gone. None of those parental rights out of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, or the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, or the International Covenant on Economic and Social Rights, which is a UN treaty from the 1960s, or there's another parallel economic or International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, also has a strong parental rights provision, both of those from the 60s. All that's gone. No more parents' rights coming out of the UN. No talk of it. all disappeared, and that's a significant factor when you're evaluating what the meaning of this particular treaty is.
Mike, if we back up for just a second, look at the picture, the big picture of this. What's going on here? Are the social planners really getting way, way more traction today? Are they coming to the point where they pretty much want to control every single family in America?
Yes, that's exactly what's going on, and especially in America.
Wow.
And the reason that that is because America is the last place on Earth is taking a really strong stand against socialism. And it's the place on Earth that still has the highest number of serious Christians.
Yes.
So they want to silence the American voices for Christianity in particular, but they want to silence America's call for freedom. They want the whole world to live in this socialist utopia. Mm-hmm. Now, to their credit, they're not being mean in their own minds about it. They think that they're doing what's good for us.
Road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, get out of the way of any of these coercive utopians, because with all, you know, they're like kind of a kindergarten teacher looks down at the little child and says, well, if you would just listen to your teacher, then you would know how to live your life a little better. Uh-huh. Well, that's how they're talking to everybody. They're talking to you and me like a condescending kindergarten teacher, that if we would just live like them, then we would be happier.
Then we could be like Sweden.
Yeah.
And you know, Sweden, the family is coming apart at the seams. What, 60% illegitimacy rates? And, you know, the economy, I think, is going to bust here, not within 10, 15 years from now. And they've outlawed homeschooling there as well.
Well, you know, if anybody thinks that European socialism works, just go to Greece or Spain. And the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And so,
and they want to drag us into that too if they can.
Socialism afloat in the United States is borrowing from multiple generations beyond ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to, you know, the whole world's economy is going to come screeching to a screeching halt for the same reason that the Soviet Union failed.
Yeah.
You cannot sustain socialism on a long-term basis. Mm-hmm. There's just not enough money.
Yeah.
And so there's no wealth creation involved. It's all, you know, divide.
Mm-hmm.
And it kills the economy, it kills freedom, and the world is going to go crash and boom here before long.
And Mike,
America needs to stand against it and stay strong.
As much as possible, we've got to defend our islands of freedom, don't we? I mean, the macro isn't looking good, but we've got some great things happening. I call them gardens in the ashes. I mean, there's some really good things happening, especially within the homeschool population. But boy, if these things come to pass, they're going to shut down some of the best things happening in America, as in home education, if they can.
If they can. Now, the good news is I don't think God has blessed us with the success and with the freedom, with the growth that we've had in the homeschooling movement for no reason.
Yeah, amen.
I believe that on the short run, we're going to be facing incredibly difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long run, I think that God has raised up the next generation of leaders that are going to be dominated by homeschool young people who are going to stand up for truth and for righteousness and for freedom and for the principles of morality that we find in the Word of God. And when that happens, America is going to see its very best days
ever. Very powerful. Very powerful.
I truly believe that we're going to have a revival of freedom in this nation, led by your kids and mine.
Yeah, amen. This seems to be God's modus operandi. He takes us down to the point where we're Gideon with 300 men, but he can make it happen with that. And I think we're just
exactly
on the cusp of that. Yeah. And Mike, one more thing I think that we need to remember is that homeschooling is moving into the second generation, as you just said. And the second generation begins to exponent by about 2020. In about 8 years, I think those 1990ers, those kids that graduated by 1999, et cetera, are going to be raising their own children. And I think we're going to see a massive, massive increase in the homeschooling population by about 2020, meaning we'll double the population.
Well, all that's good news,
and I
agree with you.
Yeah.
There's going to be growth not only internally, you know, our kids having kids, and we have more kids on average than the population around us.
Yeah.
But there are people converting to the cause on a continual basis.
Big time.
They look at our kids and they go, you know what? those are great kids. I'd like my kids to turn out like that. And so we're not only keeping a great number of our own, the vast majority of homeschool kids are homeschooling their own kids. But we're also still seeing people saying, you know, there's got to be a better way than having people train my children who don't really agree with the core principles of life that I think are important. I want to give my kids a training in my own belief system rather than have my belief system torn down for 13 years for 8 or 9 hours a day.
Yeah. And the moral of the story is, okay, let's keep that window of freedom open for another 8 years, 10 years, 12 years. Eternal vigilance, I think, is what we're after here. And that's hard work. You got to admit, you've been at this a long time.
It is incredibly hard work, and you know, and you can get tired of it after a while. But we've got to recognize that, you know, it's okay to take a weekend off here now. just go fishing, go for a hike with your kids, or have a picnic. But then on Monday, come back and be ready to stand up for freedom. And frankly, most people, if they would devote 10 hours a year to protecting their freedom, that'd be adequate. If we could get the vast majority of people in this country just to devote 10 hours a year to their freedom, to making sure they're registered to vote, informed correctly, and if they'd make about 4 or 5 calls to their elected representatives during the course of the year, which wouldn't take more than 5 or 6 hours, America would be in a great place if we could get, you know, that's not going to be done by, you know, a few hundred doing that. But if the vast majority of born-again people would do that on a routine basis, 10 hours a year, we would never lose a single election on that basis.
Great words from a man who's been in the battle a long time. Hey, Mike Ferris, thank you so much again for joining us on Generations.
My pleasure, Kevin. Anytime.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family is coming to the Denver Merchandise Mart June 14 to 16. This conference, sponsored by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, is designed to encourage and equip families through seminars on home education, family discipleship, worldview, vision, and parenting. Visit the exhibit hall featuring 200 vendors, including youth entrepreneurs. Stop by the used curriculum sale. Bring the whole family Friday night for the family film night featuring works by award-winning Christian filmmakers. Come to the Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family, June 14 to 16. Register today. Save on pre-conference pricing. For more information, go to check.org. That's CHEC.org.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, these are critical times, important battles. Posterity will remember the battles that we fought in this generation against the rising force of social planners and the tyranny that descends from Washington and, of course, the United Nations as well. As Mike was on the phone with me there for a minute, I was going to ask him about the elections coming up in November and wondered what his take on Romney was, but didn't get a chance. Now, here's a CNN report several months ago, about a month ago, where Mike Ferris did weigh in on Romney, and this is what he said. So I'll just read it off the website. CNN, quote, "I would not refuse to talk to Romney. It's not too late necessarily, but I don't know what he could say to me that would make me feel better," said Michael Ferris, who heads a homeschool grassroots organization that gets out the vote for GOP candidates. Ferris told CNN that if the election were held today, he would hand in a blank ballot. He says Romney's propensity to change his story on issues important to social conservatives, like abortion, is a problem. If I were advising him, I'd be looking for some issue to reach out to the conservatives with. But he needs to have an issue where people can't say it's one more flip-flop, said Ferris. A Republican presidential candidate can't win without a fully mobilized evangelical base. It's impossible for Romney to win the general election without the evangelicals, said Ferris. And I have to agree with that. I have to agree with that. There's no way, no way that Romney could win without the support of the evangelicals. And it's not looking good, friends, for Romney in the November 2012 elections, which means we better have a long-term perspective on this one. And certainly Mike Ferris has laid out a long-term perspective through his Patrick Henry College efforts and many other approaches he has taken to our political situation today. And we need to be looking forward to future generations and what the next generation and the next can do for the cause of freedom. But it is for this generation, it's for us, the first generation, to be faithful. And despite the fact we are in the very, very far minority, we have got to take a stand with faith, with courage ourselves, and then pass that legacy of faith and courage on to the next generation. Well, folks, before we wrap up the program today, may I encourage you to support our radio program. Be one of those brave souls willing to support this radio program, keep us on the air for tens of thousands of families around the United States and around the world that tune in to this program on faith, family, and freedom. If you would like to get behind this and be one of the 100 sponsors of this Generations Radio broadcast, go to my website, generationsradio.com, and click on Donate Today. That's right. And we're just asking for a $10 donation per month or 20 or 100, whatever you can handle. We're just looking for 100 faithful souls willing to support us for the next year to keep this radio program on the air. Again, the radio website is generationsradio.com. And folks, you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world at generationsradio.com or kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.